Hello, and welcome back to the H-Span Podcast, your go-to podcast for longevity policy discussion. I'm your host, Dylan Livingston. Today, I am sitting down with Caterina Stropianati, founder of Brilliant Minds. In this episode, we will discuss Caterina's entrance to the longevity world, the impetus behind starting Brilliant Minds, and how we as a society can better support longer, healthier lives. Without further ado, here's Caterina Stropianati.
Live long and prosper.
Right. Caterina, thank you so much for joining the H-Span podcast. I've been looking forward to this for quite some time since we first started discussing the prospects of you joining the podcast. So I'm excited you could make it. And from Greece, nonetheless. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. What part of Greece are you in right now? Are you in the sunny, fun parts?
I'm actually in Peloponnese. So it's beautiful and sunny.
Very jealous. Very nice. Awesome. So Caterina, the first thing I want to jump into here with you is your upbringing, your background. I'm always fascinated to hear how people get involved in the longevity fields. And I don't think I've heard two similar answers really yet. So I'm excited and I like to start this way. So can you tell our audience a little bit about yourself, your upbringing, your educational backgrounds, and how those things led you to get involved with longevity?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm an engineer. So not just by degree, but in mindset as well. So I'm passionate about identifying and solving problems before it's too late, before they happen. So I have been an entrepreneur and an investor for over a decade. And my first startup was an environmental AI company back in 2010. And now I've created the first fund for founders over 50, breaking the stigma of aging. In 2010, with my co-founder, we recognized the critical role the environment would play in our lives. So what we built was the first weather network built entirely on our smartphones, like highly accurate environmental predictions for consumers. Then in 2016, we spotted it was a few years after the 2009 financial crisis. So the financial system was still in disruption. Traditional assets were stagnating and we needed new technologies. And we spotted that opportunity and we saw that it's going to be new, like we need new products. So we created our fund, which was dedicated on the blockchain and in general, new financial products. And this took a while, right? The financial products was running in parallel to outdated infrastructure and took almost 7 years for the government to understand and regulate. Mm-hmm. In the last 4 years, the longevity space is in a similar path. So why focus on longevity? Now, the zeitgeist is that health is wealth. And with an aging population, this focus is only going to increase. So I believe that this is the new wave. We're still in the beginning. The governments in general are still trying to grasp the economic incentives around it. Founders are trying to understand what products actually the consumer really needs. So we're in the very beginning, but I believe, again, we need a couple of years. I've seen that on average 7 years before the government steps in and start creating the market.
Yep. And that's part of the work that A4LI is trying to do, right? Is trying to accelerate that timeline and make the governments, or really specifically the US government, understand that longevity is health equals wealth, right? And wealth equals health too. We need to clearly redefine some of the rules around the longevity industry and make it more optimal. And that's where we come in. I'm glad to hear we're on the right track. If the crypto world is any indication, that's good news. Let me ask you this though. So how did you first find out about this field? Was it just luck? Were you interested in it for your own reasons? When did you first hear about it? What year? I'm curious about that.
It's a combination of several things, like so many signals. Specifically in the longevity space, I got into like around 2-3 years ago. And I realized that living up to 120 is going to be the norm. They're building amazing stuff. And we're still, again, in the beginning, but it's happening. And there are so many triggers in terms of personal things. And then in general, I started realizing and noticing like the trend around my friends, my social circle, that again, health is wealth. And this is something very important, like for our generation, like millennial and Gen Z, mental health, like taking care of our body, what we eat, is an asset. Yeah. And now with my fund, Brilliant Minds, Brilliant Minds, it's, if you think about it, it's like a longevity intervention with a twist. So it's a different approach to longevity in a way that it's proven that, and in general, when you feel that you don't contribute to the society, when you don't feel useful anymore, then your health declines sharply, and especially your brain. I got the first signals about it through my previous fund. And while there are a few founders over 50 that they would pitch me, at the same time, even if they were experts and brilliant minds, at the same time, 100% of them, they were shy compared to the super confident 20-year-old founders. And that didn't make sense to me, because we're, for the first time right now, we have a society where, again, we're going to live up to 120, most probably pretty soon, at least 100. At the same time, our society, we're in a society where four generations can contribute equally. However, our current framework is outdated, right? It's designed in a lifespan of 25 years old. This framework was designed in the 60s. So we're forced to retire at a certain age, living half of our lives without contributing. And this is very important for longevity. So all this wisdom, passion, experience, not just for longevity, all this passion and wisdom goes wasted, and it doesn't make sense in the economy, in our well-being, and in generally, right? How we perform as a society, how we function as a society. And that's why I build Brilliant Minds, to change that narrative.
It would be interesting 10 years down the road to take maybe the biological age of all of your founders now and then see what it is in 10 years from now and track.
Yes.
That would be fascinating. That would be really a fascinating study. I don't know if you have any plans to do that, but let me know, because that's something I'm interested in. Yes, I was going to ask about Brilliant Minds, but you gave us the background without me asking. But can you talk a little bit about what the fund's specific focus is? What are you investing in, anybody or any sort of field with a founder over the age of 50? Or is it strictly for biotech or tech or space? What's the main focus of the fund, and what do you hope to see the fund become in the future?
So Brilliant Minds, again, it's the first fund for founders over 50. So it's the first time happening, right? So I'm running it like a startup, because I'm learning through that process by targeting this overlooked market. In first place, this is a US fund, which means that the majority of my deal flow is coming from US companies, not necessarily US founders, but US companies. Mm-hmm. There are many companies from the UK and Australia as well. So if I find, or Europe in general. So if I find a good opportunity, I'm going to invest. I'm open. The critical part here is that I invest in the very, very, very early stage of these companies, like pre-seed, first check. Why? This is important, because this is where the gap exists. So the Silicon Valley investors, almost all of them, they're overlooked this market, and they prefer to invest in 20, 30-year-old founders, mm-hmm. maximum. And so the oldest founders, like over 50, they don't have the capital to start their companies. Usually, even if the numbers say otherwise, there are several studies out there where they say, the numbers say that founders over 50 have three times more chances to have a successful company, successful meaning IPO or an exit event, than a 30-year-old founder. Even if we have these statistics, yeah, they don't get funded in the very early stage. Like, they get funded mostly when they are already on the growth stage. So the gap is in the very early stage, and this is where I'm focusing. I'm agnostic in terms of the industry. I'm open, and I did that in purpose, because I didn't want to limit them. I wanted to see what they're building, and the numbers are great. I have great deal flow. I get tons of emails every day And I have some surprising analytics that I'm going to publish soon. And one of these is that they deeply care about the environment. They're very like, we think, especially, right, the like boomers, we blame them for the environmental crisis. But what I see is the exact opposite. They deeply care about it. They build product services for sustainability, from e-bikes to taking advantage of waste, chicken waste, and building products, like, or even more crazy stuff. The second important thing is that they don't lack on anything about how they use technologies. That's what we have in mind, right? That they cannot evolve in terms of the technologies. But 54% of them are using AI as a co-pilot. They leverage their expertise by using AI, which is amazing. So in general, the mission of the Brilliant Minds is twofold. So one is aim to drive a cultural shift by redefining aging through investing in these founders. And the second one is to revolutionize actually longevity by addressing one of the most significant factors that age brings, which is societal neglect because of ageism.
Absolutely. It's, again, I said this before, but I really would love to see that data. If there's any way to get data on your founders, if they're willing to participate in a small study or whatever, because I'm sure it goes beyond cognitive decline, right? I think if you're a founder over 50, you're probably walking around more and going to meetings and meeting with investors yourself, right? And so I'm sure there's, it would just make sense to me that there's some connection or effect on frailty and muscle loss and diabetes. It seems like this keeping people active is definitely the most effective, one of the most effective longevity drugs we have right now, interventions we have right now. So,
That's true.
So let me ask you this, Katarina, in terms of where you are with the fund right now, have you started making any investments? You talked about how you get emails every day. Have you deployed capital yet, or are you still in the waiting and seeing phase? And what do you expect to look like a year from now, 3 years from now, 5 years from now? Are you thinking about fund two already?
So I actually have made two investments so far. The first investment, I made the first investment a month ago, but the founder is not ready to announce the round yet. So when they're ready, we're going to make an announcement. The very important thing here is that both of the founders are women. And I didn't do that in purpose, but they're two amazing women, both super experts on their field. And they identified, they had an amazing career. They retired. They knew the problems on their industry. Like one, the first investment that I made is in the e-commerce retail industry. And the second investment that I just made, and it's the first time I'm talking about it, I haven't mentioned anything about it, it's on the blockchain and AI space. And she's an amazing founder with a great career in huge companies, the top two companies in the space. And I'm the first check in these companies, and I'm supporting these founders with actually three things. One is the capital. Of course, it's very important in the very early stage, giving the signal. The second thing is that, of course, making introductions and like opening their network. Even all these founders, actually, they don't really need my help, to be honest, because that's the magic with the founders over 50. They have their own network. They have the social capital and they know what they're doing. They know their industry. They have deep knowledge about it. They already form partnerships before even they raise money, something that you never see in other founders. It's very rare to see a founder like forming partnerships with big companies before they raise their Series A. But they manage, because they have the connections, they have their network, they manage to do all this even before they raise capital. So my job is pretty much just, giving their capital, kicking off, giving the signal, and then whenever they need me, if they need me, I'm there for them at any level.
So let me ask you this. I know this is specifically for people over 50, right? But what if you find someone who's 47 and has a great... do you get it stuck in the weeds there? Or are you willing to make exceptions if a company's awesome? I can't imagine you'd invest in a 20-year-old, right? No matter how awesome the company is, but maybe. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, that's a great question. And many founders ask me, they're 49 and they ask me if that's the young. Actually, I started the fund with over 60, but then tons of founders on their 50s, they said, hey, we are also getting discriminated. And they're building great stuff. And that's true. The discrimination starts for many industries, even from their 40s, right? So I iterated and I said, all right, it's over 50. But yeah, I'm not asking for an ID. But in general, I'm trying. Yeah, the key is if you see a multi-generational team, this is important. If someone is, let's say, 48 with a 30-year-old founder, co-founder, this is magic because we have two generations merging, working together, two different minds. And this is going to bring different perspective on how they grow their startup. But yeah, I'm not strict. I'm not asking for an idea. You're asking. But I'm trying to keep it. Yeah.
New drinking age is for brilliant minds. Let me see your ID. Let me see your ID. I'm checking ID. No, it is. As a young founder myself, I can definitely say there is a level of kind of enthusiasm and go attitude that kind of younger founders can bring, right? Looking at the world in a different way. But I'm speaking strictly from experience here, A4LI would not exist if we didn't have our more experienced board members and chairwoman step in and be a guiding force with their own networks. I think the ultimate goal or the sweet spot is getting a little bit of both, getting that kind of younger energy that the Silicon Valley crowd loves, but then also really having some strong, experienced, and deeply networked leadership at the top is the way to go. I know we've talked about this offline a little bit, but when you are speaking with a company that you want to invest in, do you ever suggest that they take on maybe some younger advisors or find a younger co-founder to help get in that sweet spot? Or are you hands off and let them do what they want to do?
Actually, the due diligence that I do is exactly the same as a younger person. Mm-hmm. I don't change my process because they're older. And Someone else asked me, do you ask them for their retirement save or in general, like when they plan to retire, what's their plans? And I'm not doing these questions. It doesn't make sense. And this is the point, right? I don't want to treat them as a separate group.
Sure.
I want to include them.
Sure.
And our society is multi-generational. It's not just, yeah, like 20, 30 years old, right? Individuals. It's multi-generational. So, to your question, I don't really, it's very important, right? The reality is that in order to have fresh perspectives, you need to come in contact with younger founders and in general, individuals, understand the trends, how to use new technologies. Younger people are better on social media. So if you need to do something to use social media for your startup, you better ask a younger person, see how they're using it, observe them. This is, in general, keeping an open mind, right? Like, in order to stay relevant, you have to keep an open mind.
I was going to say, the greatest social media person of all time is now turning 80 in Donald Trump, so.
That's so true.
Yeah, he revolutionized. That's true. Sorry, what were you going to say?
You're right on that. Exactly. And this is a great example in general with the situation with what is happening in the politics, that no one size fits all, right? So at this point, age, you can't judge someone's health, mental health, or in general, cognitive decline or whatever, based on their age. Everyone is different. So everybody's aging different. So, you know, like younger individuals having mental health issues, older having health problems, it doesn't matter. It can happen at any age. So we shouldn't discriminate against that. I think we have the technology and the ways to overcome all these things right now and have a more inclusive society. Yeah.
Absolutely. The withdrawal of older Americans and people from society is really one of the most exclusionary things out there, right? Not being welcomed into certain spaces and not being comfortable in certain spaces because of your age, it's a terrible thing. And part of why I like Brilliant Minds so much is because not only are you looking to fund the technologies that will help us live longer, you're helping people. Like, I'm going to say it for a third time, but I genuinely would not be shocked if your founders were more cognitively aware and spryer than the average 60-year-old that they're comparing with. So I really appreciate Brilliant Minds' fun thesis and vision. I want to jump to another topic, though. Specifically, I want to talk about longevity medicine with you. And then also I want to talk about some political and geopolitical things. I'm really more interested in the geopolitical topics of conversation with everything going on right now. I'm sure our audience knows. But to touch on the longevity field, so you mentioned that Brilliant Minds specifically is not focused on longevity solely, but you've made a bunch of longevity investments in the past. Can you talk about what you're most excited about in this field? Have you, I don't know if you're have the ability to disclose where you've made investments, but are you bullish on any companies, any spaces in particular? Can you talk about your feelings about where the field is today and what you're looking forward to tomorrow?
Yeah, so I'm very interested in technologies and interventions for the brain specifically. So this is because contrary to the popular belief, this field is still in its infancy. So what if we manage to live up to 120, but our brains don't function as they should, right? And it's not just about mental health and brain diseases, but it's also about keeping our minds relevant while navigating four generations able to contribute in the society equally, plus coexisting with AI. So this is going to be an overwhelming future. And we can turn potential dangers into beneficial interventions. For example, our screens. We demonize our screens and devices. Often we blame them for mental health issues. But these devices could be used as digital drugs or medical devices. And these tools, they could support us throughout the day, like without requiring us to change our habits, quality of life, or in general, change anything actually from our daily life. So this is where I'm particularly interested in. And this is where I invest as an angel as well, besides the fund.
So this is not where I thought I was going to go with this question, but I have to ask because I saw something recently about it. What do you think about Neuralink? Are you hopeful or Neuralink type technologies, brain computer interfaces? Do you see that as potentially having, well, for starters, do you think it's necessary to survive what's coming with AI? It's either in a lot of people's minds, it's either we merge with AI or are controlled by AI. Do you subscribe to that theory? And how do you feel about things like Neuralink being seen as a longevity intervention, right? Because in the case of, I forget the patient's name, but their first patient came out and now he's able to, with the use of Neuralink, able to play Mario Kart on his Wii, right? What do you think about all that stuff? Is that something that you're really interested in investing in? Is that kind of where you're going?
That's a very good question. So Neuralink is, we've seen that it's a BCI, right? Brain computer interface. And we see it's a growing market. We see there are so many companies out there besides Neuralink, but because of Elon Musk, this is the most popular. So this is an invasive way. And we see that being used mainly for mobility problems because this is the first step. They don't use it for these diseases like Alzheimer or dementia yet. Too early. It's too early to discuss about, our minds being controlled by the computer. We're not there yet. It's in a very, very early stage. But I'm more interested on actually devices that they don't really change. That in the first place, they're not invasive. That's very important. Because the average person, at least for the next 5 years, it's not going to put a chip on their brain unless they have an urgent problem. So I believe more in everyday devices like our screens, things that we already use and how we can use them for us medical devices. For example, one of the companies that I invested in, two of the companies actually, one of them is they're using BCI in a different way with everyday devices that we use, starting from headphones. So they detect the brain waves of your brain. And when you get distracted, like when you feel depressed, when you're distracted or if you have any ADHD problems, they detect that and they give you feedback through music to bring you back on your focus mode. So you don't have really to put anything in your brain. You don't have to change any of your habits. You wear a device that you already use, and this works as a medical device and everybody can use it. Another one, yeah.
You got to hook me up with that. I might cure my ADD finally. So I need you to hook me up with
exactly.
That.
The name, yeah, the name of this company is Neurobu. Okay. So another company that I invested down the line. So what they're doing is that they're building digital drugs. So instead of chemical drugs for the brain, they're building images where you just have to watch them and they cure your, starting from diseases of the eye. The eye is an extension of the brain, and then moving forward to diseases of the brain. So imagine in the future, watching a movie and this being part of your Alzheimer prevention or in general prevention or in general your therapy on Alzheimer without having to change anything, without putting a chip on your brain. You can do that through at your home, and it scales, which is very important. Everybody can do that. So these are the things that I'm interested in.
Huh. Fascinating. I did not know that coming into this conversation. You're teaching me right now a little bit about your preferences. That's fascinating. So where do you see the longevity / neuro world going in 5 to 10 years? We mentioned the Neuralink stuff and putting chips in your head. How far out do you think that is? What do you think we should expect to see in the next 5, 10 years?
Yeah, that's very hard to tell, but I believe that many current industries will fall under the same umbrella of longevity, because right now we have several verticals, like we have the mental health, cancer treatments, aging field, Alzheimer, femtech, femhealth. So I believe the key will be interventions with a holistic approach, because prevention inherently has a holistic approach, right? Focusing on overall health rather than curing diseases individually. And we're following this approach because they like curing one by one, because this is how we currently cure diseases. But with prevention on the table, we lead on a Catholic type, holistic type of interventions.
Absolutely.
This is one of the reasons that I'm interested in the brain, because it plays a holistic approach in our bodies that we haven't comprehended well.
Yeah, 100%. Targeting aging is really the most preventative kind of medicine out there. We're preventing, the goal is to intervene before the onset of disease and prevent these diseases from manifesting. So I do agree there will be some sort of like reorientation, how we look at all of these, or reconfiguration, how we look at all of these different things. I'm glad you also mentioned mental health, because people are not going to want to live a long time if they're depressed or not happy, right? And I think that's we don't need to dwell too much on it, but I'm glad you mentioned it, because it's something that I think the field doesn't do the best job of discussing enough. And we can give you all the drugs and therapies and interventions in the world to help you live longer, and that might cure a little bit of your depression, but if you're depressed, people are not going to want to live longer, or are not going to have the will to maintain health as they age. So I'm glad you brought that up. And I agree with you. A lot of these things will fall under one umbrella term or field. I think they're all very, very related, that it's hard for it not, as we discover more, it's going to be hard for them not to be intertwined. Awesome. Awesome. So Katarina, the last thing I really want to get your thoughts on here are the longevity political type questions that I ask all of my attendees. But right now we're talking in perhaps the most hectic, chaotic political time of my life. I don't know about you. Would you say this is the craziest time of your life politically?
It is. Yeah. And actually it's the first time that I'm voting as a US citizen. So interesting times.
I don't know if you tell me if you want me to take this out, Katarina, but I remember in April, you were on CNN or MSNBC or one of those networks because you were one of the potential jurors for the Trump case. That video makes me laugh all the time, mostly because I'm like, oh my God, look at Katarina over there. That's awesome. and you mentioned on that interview that you've just got your citizenship. When did you get it? Or not citizenship. Are you citizenship, right?
Yeah, it is a citizenship. And that was
last year,
like August. Yeah.
Very nice. Very nice. And what a first election to be voting in, my goodness.
Yeah, I know.
Very, very cool, though. So let me ask you this. Generally, how do you think the government should approach regulating and promoting longevity and health span improving medicine research and development? Do you think this is a role of the government? What roles do you think the government should play?
Yeah, so the government will play a huge role, as in any other industry, right? Like blockchain, AI, all industries. Right now, it's a wild west. I think we all agree on that. Companies right now are trying to find solutions, going offshore, and doing all these therapies. So they're trying to hack it, right? But this is a great sign that we're still in the very, very beginning. But I feel that we're still in the phase where the government doesn't really understand what is longevity. Absolutely. And this is not only their problem. I think it's our problem too, as a community ecosystem, because there are many bottlenecks, right? So the problem is not defined very well. What is aging? Another thing is that how we measure aging. So we have to be clear about that. And there's not a consensus around it. And we're talking about something different, right? We're bringing on the table something new. We're talking about aging, we're talking about aging in general, not just diseases. And everybody's trying to bind diseases with aging. Makes sense, but it has to be very clear for the government to jump in. And the third bottleneck for me, it's scalability of these solutions that we're proposing right now. So the government, in order to step in, and this is where always steps in, is where they say economic incentives. And right now, they're not economic incentives for the government to step in. Now, everything is blurred and it's not clear. So promoting a market is best achieved through economic benefits. And what does it mean for the economy to have healthy, productive 80-90-year-olds? That's the question we have to answer to them.
Mm-hmm. There are efforts there, right, to the longevity dividend iterations seek to answer that question. But I think there definitely needs to be more precise data on what a healthy 80 and 90 year old would do for the economy. And intuitively, you would think that it would only really produce positives for the economy, right? We're removing the burden of end of life care and we're replacing it with intelligence, wise, long-lived people who have seen a lot of things and have the health capabilities to act on what they know. It's just a matter, though, of really defining that and giving it to the right government officials. And part of my frustration a little bit is there's so many other hectic, terrible, crazy things going on in the world. If we, as an industry, had started this effort 5 years ago, we would be in a different place. But we're doing it at a time where there are world wars and inflation and all these kind of economic disasters and political catastrophes. And I'm not saying that as an excuse, but it's hard to get a sentence in on Capitol Hill. We've been doing a good job of it, but I have to ask, did you get a chance to see that NIH proposal that came out about a month ago?
I did, yeah, briefly, I did.
Mm-hmm. That right there, I can say definitively, was not a dig at the biology of aging field at all, them removing the NIA. It was more a general lack of awareness, right? And when we reached out and had conversations with the staffers and the offices that put this together, they were receptive and open and very interested in seeing what potentially a standalone biology of aging division would look like and how it would bolster health outcomes in America. But really, it's just like a lack of knowledge kind of thing, because this field is so new and there are so many things going on in the world, right? Beyond just the catastrophes, there's other wonderful fields that are being developed. Climate and AI, crypto, blockchain, space, right? There's so many things that are looking for attention. So I think it's mainly on this field to produce the arguments that are necessary to cut through all the noise. And so part of what we're trying to do at A4LI is develop those talking points. But this is going to be, a field-wide initiative that needs to get done. Yeah, so sorry, I rambled there for a little bit. But
No, I totally agree. Yeah, in this noisy world, how do you get their attention? And one of the biggest crises that it's going to grow, it's only going to grow, it's the aging population. This is going to be a crisis, but nobody's paying the attention as they should right now. But this is going to happen, and it's happening already in Korea, Japan, Europe, and it's going to happen in the United States soon. And the numbers don't add up. If you watch CEOs like Larry Fink, the CEO of BlackRock, he's trying to bring this conversation of the aging population on the table because the numbers doesn't make sense. The retirement numbers are overwhelmed. Healthcare expenses. He's trying to bring this conversation on the table, but probably he's not the right person to talk about it. Nobody's taking it in a positive way. Elon Musk is trying to talk about it and say he's trying to promote the idea of having more babies. So different ways. With Brilliant Minds, I'm bringing on the table actually a different approach to this problem. And I believe longevity is actually the way to go. So this is going to be a huge thing. Hopefully, they're going to pay attention because before it's too late. Because if you think about it, as a country, the United States, what's a better, besides the obvious benefits with like reducing the healthcare expenses for the government, the most important is the branding. Imagine a population thriving throughout their lives, regardless of age. Like it will drive innovations we never imagined before. So Japan they haven't, even if they already have this problem in Korea, they haven't found a way to implement solutions in their society and motivate their population to thrive, even if in general, the demographics are changing. I think, but the United States, however, is typically the fastest in understanding how to monetize all these things and new technologies and create new markets and products when a crisis is coming. I believe that in general, the United States is going to be the first one regulating this space, the longevity space. And it's not that they're not great scientists elsewhere. It's that the United States understands scalability.
Yep.
And sooner or later, with our help, what you're doing, if we give them a clear picture and the benefits, the economic incentives, I think they're going to be the first one.
Absolutely. You know, that is A4LI's mission. We're definitely moving in the right direction. And when we're offline, I'll tell you some developments. But I was thinking while you were talking, right, the aging population bomb is slow moving. So sometimes I feel like people don't understand it because it's not like an acute thing that's happening that you can see. It's not shots are being fired. It's not a tornado is coming and ripping through that's double the size of the average tornado or hurricane or whatever it is. It's not visible in the same way that climate change or wars or any of those other spaces or problems or crises, it's not visible in the same way. But what is visible is the economic data, right? And I found one of the most powerful talking points that, you know, that we have here is Japan. Now, Japan hit this sort of aging demographic bubble in the 90s. And they have a lower GDP today than they did back then.
Exactly.
And there are other factors for it, but really the fact of the matter is they didn't have enough kids for the last 50 years, and everybody in their population is getting older. And so how can you produce economically if you don't have enough working age people and you're taking care of too many elders? I've been grappling with this for a long time, trying to figure out how to really hammer home the point. And I think pointing to countries that have gone through this more than the US has and has suffered because of it is the way to do it. So that's a potential way to do it. So that's something just for people listening, for you to remember there, while we don't have necessarily like a picture we can show our elected officials, there are a lot of data points that back what we're talking about here. Huh. So we're about to run out of time here. We're about 5 minutes away. Katarina, the last thing that I like to do on these interviews is I like to have our guests give our audience a reason to be hopeful for the future. Like we said, there's a lot of crazy nonsense going on right now in the world. And sometimes it can be a little difficult for people to be excited about what's to come. Can you tell us what gets you out of bed? Can you tell us what you're excited about, what you're hopeful about, what keeps you ticking? What are you looking forward to in the future, and why are you hopeful for humanity?
That's a very good question. Again, there's so many things that are happening, as you said, noise, too much noise out there. At the same time, we see that amazing solutions and founders building great things and solving all these problems. And especially in the longevity space, what I love with the longevity specifically and compared to the other industries that I'm involved in is that longevity goes hand by hand with purpose. Mm-hmm. It's if you think about it, as you mentioned earlier, if you don't have purpose, then longevity doesn't exist, right? What's the reason, like, to live longer? But I see that now that our values are changing into this direction, I see that every day, like in the younger generations, it's very important what we said before, that health is wealth, which brings a tons of new things on the table, from improving so many things from mental health. And I see amazing founders working on this stuff. And this is what wakes me up in the morning with Brilliant Minds. It's not just a fund, right? It's a movement. And I see the excitement on these 60-year-old like founders that they really need to keep going. Like, continuity is very important, like an alternative to what is this, you know, the old framework. So these are truly, yeah, when I wake up, it's something that it's not, oh, I have to see founders again, because the emails that I see are more around, oh, I feel seen. I feel that, thank you for doing that. I want to continue. I want to continue building stuff. I have so much to give. I want to contribute. When you see all these founders wanting to build and contribute to society, that's heaven, right? And so my message to everybody is that even if the world seems so destructive and noisy and everything is going to hell, at the same time, I believe that we live in the best time. If you think about it, we have everything at this point. We have access to amazing technologies. We have the United States, even with the problems that we have. The American dream is still there. If it sounds cliche, if you want to build big stuff, you can do it at scale. And this is amazing. This is a privilege. Don't, even of this all this noise, I really believe that we're in the best time for life. Great technologies. We're working on amazing stuff, prolonging our lifetimes. Think about it. Our health span. We're trying to solve advanced stuff, right? That they wouldn't imagine before. And what is going to bring, like other stuff that they're going to bring beyond that. So in general, the world is not as bad as it seems. We just have more information. That's why it seems bad. That's what I want to say. And it seems that everything is going, it's getting worse. But the reality is that we have so much information. And the key here is like to be picky and remove the noise, focus on the signal and build stuff, because things are happening. And thank you for, you know, what you're doing. It's very important. You're bringing actually longevity into the forefront of the government. I think it's going to accelerate things massively. And we don't have to wait for many years. I think what you're doing, we will see things happening in the next 1-2 years very fast. So I'm very positive and optimistic, actually.
I thank you for that, Katarina, first. That's what I'm dedicating my life to here. And hopefully we can get something done earlier than a year or two from now. That's my hope. But then sometimes the slowness of governments, right, that's definitely a thing. I agree with you 100%. It's hard sometimes to weed your way through all the nonsense and the BS. But if you can, you'll see that we are blessed to live in the most stable and healthy and wealthy time in human history. And your social media thread might not be helping you realize that, because fear sells and people are negative. I think many people are negative inherently.
Correct.
I think if people can make it to the other side and really weed out all the nonsense, they'll see that this is a beautiful world to be living in, and we're all very lucky. And we're going to, as a collective species here, keep pushing to get us to that city on the hill, as the Puritans said, right? That's what we're pushing for here. So with that all being said, Katarina, we're about to hit time here. Before we hop off, is there anywhere our audience can find you on social medias, websites? I want to give you a chance to plug Brilliant Minds here. So can you tell our audience where they can find you?
Yeah, I'm very active on LinkedIn, so they can message me there. They can connect with me on LinkedIn and through the website of Brilliant Minds. It's brilliant-minds.com. They can send me what they're building. So they can send me their deck and tell me more about their startup, and I'm happy to check it out and let them know. So yeah, they can contact me there.
Awesome. You heard it there. Brilliant-Minds. All right. Thank you, Katarina, for joining us. And thank you all to our audience for listening. We will see you in a few weeks. Awesome.
Live long and prosper.
Thank you, Katarina, for making the time to join us today. And for those of you listening at home, I hope you found this conversation as enlightening and informative as I did. If you have anyone you would like to see make an appearance on our podcast, you can send your suggestions to us at info@a4li.org. HSPAN will return in a couple of weeks, but until then, let's live long and prosper.